Okay. I think that is almost fairly obvious, really. The fact that, you see, Adam, we all came from Adam. I mean, you've only got to trace the line, you see. It came from God to the Christ, which was his son, and then his son had to reproduce, and he reproduced, and it was Adam. And then, of course, in Genesis 2, 21, 22, Adam's put under this deep sleep. And the next thing he wakes up, well, he doesn't wake up, but he is introduced to this woman who God never created but was formed. And they kind of got together. He said, this is Adam said, "You are bone of my bones. You are flesh of my flesh." He did not take the woman and bring her up to his level, but he took himself down to her level. And therefore, I know that he was still asleep. And Adam has been still asleep. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1 Corinthians 15:34, what does Paul say? Wake up. Awake, and you will discover that you are righteous. Yes. That's what he was saying. So the blindness, the sleep of death has really gotten hold of all of us. And when we're talking about, you know, a move of God, we're really talking about, hey, we're just waking up. And this weekend, maybe some have just begun to wake up. Because it's very easy just to fill your head with a lot of knowledge. And if you do that, of course, then you'll have to argue your point with everybody that disagrees with you. That's what happens. But if you're preaching the truth, people may not understand, but they're not going to argue with you because there's something about the truth, you see. And so if I say what God is saying, and I made a deal with God, I mean, if you can make a deal with God, I just use that terminology, but 40 years ago I said, "Father, I am going to preach whatever you tell me and not what the theologians had previously taught me." Because that was a total confusion. I mean, you know, you go from the Baptists to the Pentecostals and then to the, and so on and so on. And you just really don't know where you are. And everybody's along the road and somebody stops at that point and then that's what they become. And you know. But see, to me, I believe for myself that what I know is like a drop in the bucket. And what I don't know is the ocean out there. And that's today. So don't get the idea that I think I know everything, because I do not. And that's the reason why I am not interested in dying. That's the reason. I want to live until I know everything there is to know about the Christ. And that may take another 100 years, I don't know. So she's the mother of all living because, you see, let me put it another way. The seed that brought you into this world was in your father. See, we all are the product of an egg and a seed. And so that was in your father. But his seed was in his father. And his seed was in his father. Now, if you keep on going, what happens? You come to God.
That's right. That's
right. And you have to go through Adam, the Christ, to God. So she's the mother of all living from that point of view. But that's not going to make you a child of God in your consciousness. You just be a mortal man. If you want just a little bit more, you go to 1 Corinthians 15, which is what we were looking at this morning. So in verse 45, he says, it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The first man, Adam, was the first earth man. But he was not the first man created. The first man created was Christ Jesus. And he's the Son of God. But he was told to reproduce out of himself. So he didn't go to find some other seed in order to reproduce. He could reproduce out of himself because he was spirit. And spirit is male and female functioning together as one. And so he was able to do that. He did it in a way in which we could not do, because he was the Son of God, so he was the one actually that formed this whole earth that we are living on today. This is not the original creation, this earth. This earth is the creation, rather the formation, by Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Because, you see, normally in a kingdom, and God created his kingdom in Genesis 1, and it was complete, but it was complete in the spirit world, and still is, and it won't matter for another million years. It will never change because it's in the spirit world. It cannot change. Well, now, normally in a kingdom, when the father dies, the son becomes the king. He was the prince until he dies, and then he becomes the king. But he's got a father that's not going to die. You see, so he's never going to have the kingdom. And so he says to him, all right, I'll tell you what. Use the blueprint that I used to produce the kingdom in the first place. And so that's why Jesus said, I only do what I see my Father do. And that's why this earth is just a copy, if you like, of the kingdom that his Father created in the beginning.
Like the tabernacle.
So this is the kingdom of God. This is where the kingdom is going to be built here on this earth. And this is the challenge, if you like. Because we've had, well, according to, you know, the biblical people that work out dates and so on, they say that there was, 4,000 to Christ, and then there's another 3,000, and we're in the 3,000 now, aren't we? Is it 3,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people are now starting to look for the end of the world. Well, I have it in my mind that there's a long, long, long way to go yet. Because this earth has to become as the Garden of Eden. There'll be no deserts. There'll be no barren places. There'll be no oceans. It'll be a totally different scene. And all of that has to happen. See, the oceans speak of separation. Mm-hmm. Like I said, if I had to go home from here, I've got to go 16 and a half hours in a plane flying at 500 miles an hour to get over to where I live. So it's a form of separation. If there's no oceans, we can get in your motor car and drive around the world, you know. Whatever. I don't think we want to. What do we do to wake up? I would probably have to say that the waking up really is a job for the spirit that dwells within you. I'm not sure that we are totally capable of simply waking up. I think that that is part of the ministry of the Spirit of God within us. He is the one that is the life force within us. And if he doesn't energize us, I don't think there is any chance that you and I can simply wake up and come up with all of the answers. You see, it's the Father in me that has taught me what I know. It wasn't the fact that I suddenly woke up and then all this knowledge is in my head. No. All my knowledge is in the Christ that dwells in me, who said, I and my Father are one. So he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So I don't think that it's just a question of you and I waking up. Give somebody a shake and they'd be awake, but I wish it was that easy. But you see, we have the whole issue of life for us is that in the Garden of Eden, the woman was deceived. She never had a chance. Eve never had a chance because the serpent was much smarter than she was. Because Eve was never created out of God. She was never created. Therefore, I believe there was a factor missing in her life. The truth is that when that woman was introduced to Adam, Adam said, you are bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, and so on. She never had any relationship with Adam. It doesn't say that she sat there and said, I want you to tell me everything you know. She's off on her own immediately. They haven't even had contact. After he had introduced himself and said that they were on an even keel here together, then she's off to carve her own life. And I believe that's a picture of the prodigal son. It's also a picture of us. Because do you realize that every person on this earth, male and female, became the woman? Mm-hmm. That's the truth. Every person, we all became the woman. And that's because that's what Adam did. And we all came out of Adam, you see. And so it's not, I could go on and tell you much more about the woman because it's a subject that I've never heard people preaching on because they're probably afraid that everybody's going to argue with them. Well, you can argue whatever you like. I mean, I don't claim to be the end of all discussion on these things, but what God has shown me is that we all became that woman. And the woman, of course, was the living soul. Mm-hmm. She was living out of a carnal mind. That was all she had to go by, was her own mind. Why didn't the serpent go for Adam? Why didn't the serpent try to deceive Adam? Because he knew he couldn't. He knew he couldn't. He was Christ. But the woman, totally vulnerable. And that's why I believe that we are so vulnerable to all the doctrines and teachings and crazy stuff that's in the world today. And some people are so mixed up that you wonder if they can ever get sorted out. And I'd just like to say to you, folk, we are not going to sort them out by continuing to argue the point over this and that and something else. What this world needs is somebody to stand up and say, "Thus saith the Lord." And if that is true, I believe there's a power in that word that will carry it through into experience in the life of people. And that's what I work on, that principle. Because I know that, you know, there probably would be many people here that have heard me over this weekend, and some of those things when I said it, they probably said, "Oh my God, where did he get this from?" See? But then you start to think about it, and that word is like a something that's inside here that's saying, "Come on, listen to this, listen to this. You haven't got any answer to this, really. You might have some silly idea that you're right and this is wrong." But when you say what God says, it's like Jesus. Who was there that argued with Jesus? Nobody. Nobody argued with him. When he said something, that was it. And the Apostle Paul was like that, except for a few of the elders in the church in Jerusalem. They argued with him. They said, "You can't do this. This grace that you're talking about, you know, where God, you know, sees us perfect in himself, you can't do this. They've got to keep the law." That's what the church back in Jerusalem was saying.
Yeah.
But see, the disciples, I mean, these guys had walked with Jesus for 3.5 years, for goodness sake. They heard everything he said, they saw everything he did, and they still didn't have a clue. And those apostles, I mean, you know, they're up on the mountain there, and here's Jesus being transfigured right before their eyes. A sight that would have been the most, I don't know how to put it, it must have been the most amazing sight that they could possibly have seen. This body beginning to glow like the noonday sun. And this is Jesus standing there. And they say, "I think this would be a great place to build three cathedrals up here, you know, one for you, one for Moses, and one..." Oh, Lord, help us. You see? And then he had to tell them, "When you go down the mountain, don't you tell anybody what you saw." Why? Because they would not be able to tell anybody. And if they tried, they'd mess it up. You see, that's what happens. Mm-hmm. So this is important. I think that there is a need today for a voice of authority. And the only way I know to get that is not by going to university and getting a couple more degrees or something. It's not by anything of that nature. The only way you can get authority is if you hear the voice of God and you say what he is saying. You cannot go wrong. But see, it's easy to fool yourself and say, "Oh yeah, I heard God say thus and thus and thus," and maybe we didn't really hear that. But when we know that God has really spoken on a certain thing, then I can get up and I'll challenge the world over with that. But if somebody wanted to come along and say, "I don't agree with you and I think you're a rat bag," I'd say, "Hey, God bless you, let's go." Because I don't have to argue. And I don't have to get mad with anybody. You see? So that takes away all of the human aspect of debate and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to go on in God by debate, I'll tell you right now. If it could have, I would have done it years and years and years before I ever knew the Lord. Because I was the best debater there was. I challenged everything. But so are our young people today. They're challenging everything. That's why many children of Christian parents are not walking the way of their parents. They're not bothering to go to church. They don't even bother to get married today.
Oh,
Just go shack up with a lady, that's all. Why is that? I mean, even in marriage, I think that sometimes Christian parents have been a terrible example for their children to get married. I mean, I wasn't perfect, but we never sort of fought and carried on like lots of people today do. And of course, you know, the Hollywood there, marriage is just a happy weekend. So, the authority of God, I think, in us is really what wakes us up. It's the Spirit of God that is desiring to bring you into another level of understanding so that you can do what he wants you to do. That's all. Yeah. So, okay. Well, those two girls, they had a real problem, didn't they? Because they sent a message to Jesus. Hey, this is your friend. This is your good friend. You stayed with them. I mean, you know, you should be down here because he's sick. And if you were here, I like that. If you had been here, Lord, this was her rebuke to Jesus. If you had been here, you should have been here. Because if you had been here, he would not have died. And I can just hear Jesus saying, you're dead right, that's why I wasn't here. Because he had to die.
Yes.
Otherwise, it wouldn't have been worth him coming down.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could have come down and healed that man, and it wouldn't have had any effect much on them at all. Right. But wait till he's dead 4 days, yeah. And then calls him out of the... Oh, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know, God knows what he's doing, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a question. It's a mouthful, really. But I'm certain that everybody has felt the differences that have taken place over the years. I know I don't consider myself to be very old, but when I look back to my childhood, it was very, very different to the childhood of a person that's being born into the world today. It's a different world. And many times people don't understand that. And they wonder why some of us older people don't catch on very quickly to the idiosyncrasies of this day in which we live. And many of the ideas, particularly amongst the young people. But the fact is that changes have taken place, and in the general, they have not been for the better. We have a tremendous explosion of science today, that man can do things that when I was a child we never even dreamed about. In fact, I can sit here and talk into this little thing in front of me, and it's being recorded, and you can hear that today. In my day, that was not so. There would have to be a lot of machinery and paraphernalia that would have to be erected before we could do anything like this. So the advance in science has not been to the betterment of mankind. I believe that the advancement in science was probably intended to be for the betterment of mankind, but and perhaps in some ways in medical science and so on, great strides are being taken, and now they can attend and treat certain things that they could not do in my younger days. But generally speaking, the things that have been created today have not been for the benefit of mankind. We've got atomic bombs that can blow cities completely off the earth. We've got generating plants for our electricity in different countries that are driven by the various means. It's the nuclear power that I'm really speaking about, which when it was discovered, they found that it could do so much and benefit mankind. And to some degree, this is true. But the bad side of it, or the lower side of this thing, is that it carries certain dangers
that if this power gets out of hand, it can destroy whole nations. We've had some issues in Japan just recently with the problems that they have had, and whole areas of ground, square miles, are now unfit for human habitation. So what I'm trying to say is that much of the advancement today carries with it a kind of a left side, which is not to the benefit of mankind. We've got vehicles today that you can jump in and do 100 kilometers an hour or 100 miles an hour if you want to, and go to all sorts of places and so on. But of course then we have the carnage on our roads. Every day we hear on the news of another smash, and so many people have died, and so on and so on. So whilst there is an advance in education and in many other aspects in science, as I said before, but in education there's been a great advancement, which means that people now have the ability to apply for jobs which I could not have done as a child. And even as a teenager, I was limited in what I could do. In fact, I became a cadet engineer, and I worked in a big engineering company, and my wages was about $1.78 wow. per week. That was my first year wage. So there's a very, very big difference, but also, of course, that the engineering of my day has very little resemblance to the engineering qualifications of today. It's very, very much different. And so whilst the advancements have taken place, and I guess mankind will continue to increase in every way that they can, there is an aspect of life that I think is being slowly forgotten. First of all, the family. I think this is one of the big issues of today. We have children today that are growing up without any real parentage at all, because mother and father simply have to work. They both have to work. Whereas in my day, my mother never worked once she was married. It was her job to take care of the house, the home, the cooking and the washing and everything else, and the children. And she did a wonderful job. My mother was a wonderful person. And right to her last day on this earth, I would have done absolutely anything for my mother. Mm-hmm. She took care of us, but she also taught us how to live. She taught us how to respond, particularly when we were children, to each other. We were not allowed to fight. We were allowed to disagree if we needed to, but not to fight. And so this made a big difference to the way in which we grew up. Whereas today, we have people now on the roads that if you upset them and cut them off on a corner or something, they're likely to get out with a gun or who knows what. So it's a very different world. And the responses of people is very different because, not altogether because, but simply a part of the reason is that family life has disintegrated tremendously from the earlier days. The home is not quite the refuge that it used to be. Today it's almost, in some cases, like a war zone, with children fighting against each other, but even parents fighting between themselves, which is such a bad lesson for the children. Because if the parents will fight, then of course the children are going to fight. And I can remember asking me if I would pray for his boy, because he was always in trouble with the family and the rest of the children. And I said, well, just tell me one thing. I said, do you and your wife get on very well together? Oh, no, he said, we have our barneys, he said, we have our fights and so on. I said, well, if you have your fights, then do not criticize your children because you are the example for them. And so this is a problem also, that the art of parenting, to be a mother to your children, to be a father to your children, are roles that I think are losing their place authority in the life of children today. The responsibility that we have to produce the kind of people that we want to live on this earth. And I think that we all have to accept responsibility, at least in part, for the way in which the world is today because of our children and their behavior. So these are just some of the reasons, but the last one that I've left to the last is that I think that there is a sense in which God has been removed from the, shall we say, the pathway that we are to walk on this earth. And the fact that God has given us certain ground rules whereby we were told to love one another and so on. But this has been overlooked today, and of course our Bible has gone out of vogue very much in our modern society. There are so many people today in this world that never open this book, saying that it's not relevant today for us. It has to do with things that maybe were okay in the past, but not for today. The fact is that God created the heavens and the earth, and everything that in this earth is. Therefore, if God created everything, he has a plan. God is not stupid like a lot of people today, and particularly when it comes to scientists that produce certain things that seem to be so very wonderful in what they can do, but not taking into account the problem that they become in the hands of somebody that doesn't have any concern for others. So they can become almost weapons instead of helps in our modern society. So leaving God out of the picture, to me, is a disastrous thing, and it, I believe, has accelerated the evil that's in this world. When I was a boy, when I was a young person, even a teenager, and read the paper, every page or the front page very rarely ever showed a murder or somebody being killed in a motor accident or something. Those things seem to be not anywhere near as prevalent as they are today. So all of these things then contribute to a world which is not really becoming more sensitive to the things of God. It's not increasing the joy and the enjoyment of life for people themselves. It's not helping our family life by leaving God out, because it was God who started family. You remember, God is our Father. That's what the Bible says, and people around the world for all of those years have been saying that lovely prayer that Jesus taught, Our Father, which art in heaven. It's not God like people talk about today. The word God doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't tell you anything about who he is or what he is. But when you use the word Father, we know what you're talking about. Everybody knows. Everybody knows what a true father is. Even if they haven't had one, they know what one is. And the father is the most important member of the family from God's point of view, for the whole family, for the children, as well as for the marriage and the husband and wife together. So today, that's my answer, that when you leave God out of the equation, then we are like a boat without a rudder. We're like a world with no control. We talk about the law of God. But see, God was never a lawyer. And he really never introduced law as we understand it today. You see, God developed a relationship with this world and with the people in it. And it was not based upon a series of laws of do's and don'ts. But that law is the law of love. And the last thing that Jesus said to his disciples before he went away, he said, "I want you to love one another." And he was not just talking about disciples loving each other. He was talking about mankind. Love is the essential ingredient for happiness and for peace, both of which are sadly missing from the majority of lives today. But let me tell you, God is still faithful, and God is still there. And when a man or a woman or a child will turn to him for mercy, for help, and to receive love where perhaps nobody is willing to give it to them, then I believe that when we see this and people respond, this world is going to change. And love, when it's introduced again, must begin in the family. It can't begin with the government. It must begin in the family, and then with each one individually recognizing that they have a part to play, that love might rule and reign in this country of the United States and in all of the countries of this world, so that people can live in peace and harmony and be filled with joy.